Back on Downtown 4:30 here on a Monday afternoon. Time for us to check in with our friend, the Hall of Famer, Larry Mahoney from the Bangor Daily News. Hello, Larry.
Hey, Richard. That is, of course, Shattered Dreams by Johnny Hates Jazz, written by Clark Datchler, who plays keyboard and is the lead singer. And how they came up for the name of the band, Johnny Hates Jazz, was that his brother-in-law was a farmer. And Datchler's sister, who's married to him, loves jazz. Well, his brother-in-law hated jazz. So they called themselves Johnny Hates Jazz. And again, that hit, that song went to number two, was at number two on three separate occasions on the Billboard Top 100, behind a Gloria Estefan song, and never made it to number one, but did make it to number one in the U.S. on the adult contemporary charts. And was a top 10 hit in several other countries. It's one of those songs, Rich, where you just won't turn the radio off if it's on. I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, it may not be a 10, but it's a solid 8.5. And it's just very comfortable to listen to and you know, just sort of bop your head to and a little toe tapping. A very simplistic song, but I've just always liked it. It's just,
me too.
Again, a really, really cool little song.
And was that it? Were they a one-hit wonder, Johnny Hits Jazz? I think they were.
Yes. Yes, yeah, 1988. But here's something, you and I have talked about this before. Technically, Jimi Hendrix was a one-hit wonder.
Well, that's true. Yes, that's right.
And what was the hit?
I think it was All Along the Watchtower.
I don't know why I even bother trying to stump you. No, exactly right. It was All Along the Watchtower. Yep.
Well, it's a great song, and maybe they'll have a comeback. You have some of these bands. Who was it recently? There was some British band that had a hit back in the early 80s that got back together after like 40 years, cut a new album, and I heard the first single, and it sounded great. And now I can't remember who it was.
Do you remember watching MTV?
Oh, yes. Oh,
back,
yes.
Back, remember that when they would get bands together? Bands unite, reunite, or something like
oh,
that.
Oh yes, I do. Yes, and, yes, I remember that.
And they would play a gig at a small venue or something.
Right.
You know, it wouldn't be a concert, but it'd be like, you know, four or five, six songs, stuff like that. And they would go and talk to them. And the one I remember was Flock of Seagulls, because there were two brothers. They just didn't like each other, so it never materialized. It was interesting because some of these bands, you know, I mean, they did get back together and play like four or five songs at a local venue and stuff. And I can't remember the name, but I really enjoyed it.
That was great. Well, let's talk a little Black Bear hockey first here, Larry. The Bears won game, single game this weekend, and took care of business against New Hampshire.
Yeah, Richard, that's the third significant losing or winless scheme that they've broken already this year. They had gone 16 games without winning at Northeastern's Matthew Arena, 0-14-2. They beat Northeastern 4-1 and then tied the next night, 2-2. BU, they had lost six in a row. Of course, they got a win and a tie against BU. And then New Hampshire, they hadn't won. They had gone 0-3-3 in their last six visits to the Whitmore Center, and they came out with an impressive 3-1 win. I just really thought they played very, very well. I did. They, they outshot New Hampshire 34-26, had 67 attempts, and New Hampshire's 42 shot attempts. So, it was an impressive performance. And of course, in the third period, you know, you figure New Hampshire's desperate to tie the game down 2-1, and Maine outshot them 14-6, but three of those six chances were gems, and Alvin Boyer made three terrific saves, and they come out with a valuable win, go to 8-2-2, and move up to fifth in both polls. Oh, no, it remained fifth in one poll. They were tied for fifth in one poll, and they're tied in fifth, but they're fifth in both polls right now, both major national polls, and they are fourth in the pairwise rankings, and that's the again, those rankings emulate the NCAA tournament selection committee process. So, I mean, yeah, and then, so that's it. That was a very important win. Plus, as I just wrote an analysis on it, there is a regional in Manchester this year, and in a perfect world, you want to keep New Hampshire out of it. You don't want them getting into the NCAA tournament because that's where they're going to be sent. If you can keep them out of it, then that leaves the avenue open for Maine if Maine can qualify, if Maine can make the NCAA tournament, because the NCAA wants to fill their arenas for regionals in the Frozen Four. So, you know, I mean, Maine fans would flock to the it's a Southern New Hampshire University Arena is what it's called in Manchester. So, if not, if New Hampshire gets in and then Maine is either going, Maine would either go to Allentown, Toledo, or Fargo, North Dakota.
Ooh.
So, but again, it's 12 games into the season. I mean, anything can happen. Denver, the defending national champs, got swept at home by Arizona State this weekend. Hockey is so unpredictable. But, so far, again, they put themselves in good position. They get 4, 5, 6, 7 non-conference games up. They go to RPI, their home to Stonehill, play Bentley in Portland, and then, of course, have the University of Denver coming in the first week of January before they get back to hockey's play at UMass Lowell.
Maine football finished their season losing to New Hampshire. The Bears go from 2 wins each of the last 2 years to 5 wins this season. But progress, clearly. But they also ended up losing 4 of their last 5 games. Does that take some of the shine out of the overall improvement in the record?
Hey, what was the name of the song we played?
Johnny, Shattered Dreams. For a team that was 4-3, right, early in the season, midway through.
Yeah, but the thing is, Rich, and I think you and Bob came up with this, that if they had beaten Elon and New Hampshire, I think they would have been in.
Oh, absolutely, because everything that had to happened. I said Monmouth was going to win their last 2 games, beating Villanova and Stony Brook, and they did. And I said New Hampshire was going to beat Stony Brook, which they did do. And so if Maine had won, I think 7-5, 5-3 in the conference, Maine would have been in a 5-way tie for 5-3 in the CAA with tiebreakers over New Hampshire and Villanova. They would have gone as the third team in.
Yeah. And so and again, both winnable games.
Yeah.
I think what we saw on Saturday was a New Hampshire team that is used to winning. They're used to going on to the postseason against a Maine team that hasn't been since they got to the Final Four in 2018.
Right.
They didn't panic when they got down 9-0. They didn't, ditch their game plan. They got and I think, Rich, I don't know if you'd agree with me, I think the turning point was the blocked field goal. I think Maine had the ball at the 50.
Right, with a 9-0 lead, and they took over at the 50 and went 3-and-out.
Yeah. I think if they put one in right there, even a field goal, maybe not so much, but if they had converted that into a touchdown and they go up, 16-0, or whatever, if they go for two anyway. But if they go up, then I think the momentum is very much on their side. I think they if they go in with a 16-0 lead, based on the Villanova game and the Bryant games, how they had great first halves and were able to Villanova, they just kept the pedal to the metal in the second half. Bryant climbed back into it, but too little, too late. I think they would have won the football game, but they didn't. It was they got 5 yards on 3 plays, punted. New Hampshire comes down, and New Hampshire goes into the locker room. And they're not down. They're not trailing by 9 going in. They're trailing by 3. Trailing by 2, and then they
open
the kickoff and 2, and they go down and on the second on the first play from scrimmage. The converted cornerback runs 57 yards for the touchdown, and they had the lead. And again, Maine scored again. Montego Moss with a phenomenal catch for the touchdown to make it 9-0 with 40 seconds left in the first quarter. That was it. No points the rest of the way.
Yeah,
a total of 8 first downs.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how the coaches approach the off season and what they look for, what they need. I know Carter Peavy has a year of eligibility left. I don't know in this day and age, will he want to come back and play another year? Do they want him back another year?
I don't know either. That's a good question. But, I mean, the bottom line is it was a frustrating end to the season, but you can't diminish the fact they won 5 games. more than they had won the first 2 years combined. So there's some belief now in the locker room. And now it's now everything's in the tumbler with the portal and everything else. Who comes back? It almost doesn't matter. It's almost like it's almost fruitless to write a recap story and look ahead to next year because who knows? I mean,
right.
Here's who could come back, but does Xavier Holmes come back? Bleeding? How many times has a defensive end led the team in tackles?
Right. He had a phenomenal year and some interesting moments. I mean, the win over Villanova, their signature victory of the year for a team that's seeded in the playoffs this year, played pretty well in the second half against the overall number one seed, Montana State. And, you can add this little kicker. They scored more points against Oklahoma than the Crimson Tide did.
I know. I was watching the game too. It was. I don't believe, and they actually led. I mean, I don't think Alabama led that game.
Never. Right? No.
Yeah. So, my heart, Jordan deserved a good year, and he did. I mean, he got five wins. He's getting his culture established. Next year's huge. And again, yeah. We just don't know with the portal what he brings back, who will come back, who will leave. I know they're very high on Beulah, the quarterback, the freshman, true freshman quarterback. Will Peavy want to spend another year in Orono? I don't know. He had a good year. I mean, he did. Could have been better, but all in all, I think if he came back, I think he'd have a real good season next year. Now, again, they have to find a lot of receivers. They do have some there already. Nick Laughlin from Cape Elizabeth being one of them, and Trevin Ewing has eligibility. So I mean, they have some, but losing Montego Moss is a big loss.
Joe Gillette too.
And what?
And Joe Gillette too.
Another one. Yeah. Yeah. And Cooper Heisey became their reliable tight end. But they do have a couple good tight ends back, but and he was a leader of the team, as was Constanza, the defensive lineman. So. He spoke volumes in the press conference after the game about these seniors, as he should. I mean, it was a tough, to go 4-18 the first 2 years, and the seniors stuck with him and, again, helped create a better environment, a better culture. And, now the question, what can they do from here? Can they push the envelope? Because, if you can get to seven wins, in this conference, or seven wins overall and get to be two or three games over 500 in the conference, you're going to the postseason. But again, we just don't know what the tumbler, what the numbers are. Oh, who could come back and who has eligibility, but, will they return and use that eligibility at the University of Maine, or they look to move on like Rohan Jones now, who's, at Montana State and, they're the number two team in the country, right?
Yeah, number one now.
Number one now? Yeah. Okay.
And look, I do know this. It's another schedule, not as tough as this year, but it's another year with seven road games and only five home games next year.
They play eight conference games, okay?
Right. And that's 4-4 there. But they've got three of their four non-conference games will be on the road.
Okay, where are they going?
They're going to Liberty. They're going to Georgia Southern. A return trip to Merrimack, and then Stonehill will be up here.
Okay, all right. So you got again two FBS teams for the money, but they won't be Oklahoma.
No, and I suspect this might be the last time they do that. I think these were some prior commitments that preceded Jude taking over as athletic director. I don't think in the future you'll see Maine playing two FBS teams anymore. I don't think.
No. But what would be interesting if they take on a top 10 FCS team,
right?
But again, one of the issues is travel, because if you're playing a top FCS team, then that means they could wind up going to Delaware because they'll be in an FBS team next year,
right?
In the FBS, or some of the top FCS schools are North Dakota State, Montana State, Montana, South Dakota State, teams like that. So again, there's a travel commitment, but it'll be interesting to see what what they do after next year, after, because I know aren't they contracted to play Central Florida in 2 or 3 years too?
Yeah, they've got Central Florida down the road, I believe Akron, and they've got two games with BC, I think, in 2026 and in 2030.
Okay, and those are bus trips.
So yeah, those are great
trip. And that's one alumni can go to also, you know, because it's in New England. So, but yeah, like I said, I mean, overall, didn't want it end that way. And again, a 9-0 start, and then the blocked field goal were encouraging. And you thought, hey, they were, and again, New Hampshire couldn't run the ball a lick. I mean, they just couldn't run it at all. They weren't getting out of the backfield. I mean, they were getting tackled for loss. But you know, teams that are used to winning find ways to win when they don't play their best. They treaded water in the first half and then came out in the second half and showed why they are. But I think one of the things the defense obviously couldn't get the stops they needed, but yet they held them to field goals. I mean, you know, they really did. They only scored one touchdown until, you know, the gimme at the end of the game when Maine went for it on fourth and 10 and really didn't have a
drive for a touchdown, because as you mentioned, they had that 57-yard run coming out of the half.
Right. So, you know, I mean, as crazy as it seems, and they held New Hampshire to 286 yards, but the offense just didn't, you know, 8 first downs, 0-for-9 in third down.
Yeah, Maine, that was really shocking. Maine also didn't convert a third down in the second half against Elon, so they finished the season going 6 quarters without a third down conversion. Now, part of that was Saturday especially. They were constantly 3rd and 10, 3rd and 12, 3rd and 15,
correct,
a couple of 3rd and 20 pluses because of some costly penalties.
Yeah, and again, you look back and you wonder, you know, you have to question play selection. What could they have done? Because I think probably you and Bob agree, they have playmakers. They had playmakers. Montego Moss, Trevin Ewing with his speed, Mo Arifin, their running backs were dependable, hard-running backs. They should have done more. Carter Peavy, look at his, I mean, you know, he's 6'3", but he good speed. He can run.
Yeah. You've got to run the ball, and you can't give up on the run, even if you're not, you know, even if you're only getting 3 yards at a clip, you got to stick with it, because the key through the years, you know, 25, 30 years of looking at these numbers, you've got to run the ball 30 plus times a game to have a shot at winning.
Well, what was the stat Bob had last week, which we add one to it this week, was they had lost 24 of their last 27 games when they rushed for under 100 yards.
Right.
Make that 25 out of 28.
Exactly. Yeah, there is no. Yeah,
but you know, it is what it is. You know, you've got some coordinators, some new coordinators. You got to give them some time.
Oh, sure.
And I think again, the overall. It shouldn't look as a downer, because they did win 5 games. But I think there's room for growth, and they know that, and I think they'll do that. And now it's just a matter of the portal, and it's a matter of what they have coming in, who they have at quarterback, but at least the needle's pointing in the right direction, and that's a credit to, you know, the players they have that have stuck with it, and the coaching staff. And now let's see if they can improve on that next season.
Yeah, they played hard. They were competitive in every game, and that's a tribute to Jordan and the staff. Larry, we know you got to get going, but great to catch up with you as always. Appreciate you being with us today. Hope you have yourself a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you too. You too. I mean, you gotta love holidays that basically involve eating.
Food, football, and family. It doesn't get much better than that.
The 3 F's, that's true, and it's going to be a perfect day for it, because it's supposed to rain all day from what I'm hearing. So I mean, what better way to spend Thanksgiving than sitting inside watching it rain and watching some football
and napping during the 4:30 game? That's my plan.
Yeah, what's it called?
Tryptophan. Tryptophan. A combination of tryptophan and mediocre NFL football. That's enough.
That's been the case lately, hasn't it, the last several years?
Oh, yeah.
They've had some real dogs on Thanksgiving. I mean, by that, I mean a bad game.
Well, I think it's Giants-Cowboys, that 4:30 game. So that's a good opportunity to sleep off that turkey.
Oh, geez. You know, Washington. Absolutely. Tonight we got Chargers and Ravens. We got Pat Ricard from UMaine steamrolling opposing linebackers and defensive backs with Derrick Henry running right up his rear end.
There you go. Larry, thank you so much as always. We'll catch up with you soon.
Okay. Have a great one, Rich.
Thanks, Larry. Larry Mahoney, the Bangor Daily News, with us here on Downtown on this Monday afternoon.